Yeah. I'm right back at it with my brother Jay Dutch. Fresh new track for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Bear, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time, and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast, ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the what the fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.
This is old school coming live from the car on I-95 South. We actually just passed a bunch of the Bucks fans that are headed up to Atlanta to catch the Falcons game. So if you hear any horrible noise in the background, it's probably from the guy whose butt crack I can see driving on a yellow motorcycle on 95 South. I figured it'd be an interesting opportunity to come to you guys while on the road and see if you guys want to chat a little bit about the Bucks. I want to thank our sponsors, of course. We're not tailgating this week. Our friends up at Buccaneer Invasion are doing their, I think, 21st consecutive Buccaneer Invasion, formerly ATL Bucks, tailgate in Atlanta. I tweeted out the map for that earlier. So if you're out there, it is a phenomenal time. All of the net proceeds go to the charity of their choice. I believe it's actually a pediatric cancer charity this year as well. I think it's $25 for all you can eat and all you can drink. And they've got a ton of food and drinks. It's right next to the new stadium, just like it used to be right next to the old stadium, which no longer exists. So hit up John Superfan Blakely, and he'll definitely get you the information you need. But for our tailgates, which will be continuing again next week, I want to thank our sponsors, Steps Towing, Pepin Distributing, Don Q Rum, Tito's Vodka, and of course Steakhouse Elite, as well as our entire crew at the What the Buck crew. So the Buccaneers are coming off of a win over the Miami Dolphins, and it was one of the uglier games I think I've ever witnessed, but I don't ever want to call a win truly ugly, because at the end of the day, there's no column for attractive in the stat book. So the Buccaneers went up there with Ryan Fitzpatrick under the center. A number of injuries, and gutted out a victory. And that's really what matters at this point, is being able to get some wins and hopefully let a few small good things grow into a few larger good things. Now the question becomes, can they do that against a team that was supposed to be the darling of the NFC South this season? It's turned out not to be. Thomas Bassinger from Tampa Bay Times, I believe it's Tampa Bay Times, I don't keep track of it as well as I should, tweeted out a great article that I retweeted just recently, about the narratives that are going on with regards to the Bucks-Falcons game, and just a great article to read. Matt Ryan is not playing bad football. The Falcons are not playing bad football. They're trying to find their legs like everyone else is. What's happened is, at least in the NFC South anyway, is that the New Orleans Saints have caught fire, as everyone can tell by the fact they've rattled off, 8 wins in a row, I guess it is, potentially 9, I can't remember because I don't do math very well anymore. And the Carolina Panthers suddenly figured out how to play football. So in a division that we were supposed to have a significant advantage in this year with all the talent that we went out and got, we ended up, underperforming significantly, and then other people have outperformed. Now, the weird thing about the football season is, even with all of that failure all around, mostly within our walls, because you can't really control the failure outside of our walls, but the failure within our walls, we still mathematically have a chance to make a run at this thing. Now, do I think that the team that we watch, every Sunday, sometimes on Mondays and Thursdays, obviously, with deference to the NFL scheduling, is a playoff caliber team? No. But I also want to take some exception to the concept of playoff caliber. Because as we've said countless times on this podcast over the last 12 years, the regular season is just an opportunity for you to punch your ticket and get a chance to go play in another season. So, as the eternal optimist and Buccaneers fan that you know me to be, what I will say is, as the Buccaneers continue to try and get healthy, and good Lord, you look at the walking wounded this week with Hargraves out and Ayers out and others as well, but those two specifically on the defense, who are contributors. Now, I know folks have taken some umbrage with Robert Ayers. We get Will Golston back after that scary neck injury, but having those guys down, if they can start to get healthy, we get Brent Grimes out there playing good football, You know, you get a couple of wins here, and all of a sudden things start to get interesting. And at the very least, as fans, when we go to these games at the end of the year, whether it's the game with Detroit or the game with the Saints coming in the last game of the year, making those things interesting, giving us a reason to cheer, is half the battle. Then the second one is having a chance to actually do something mathematically and maybe get into the playoffs. And then beyond that is seeing something built. And that's the part I think that most of us Bucks fans are so upset about, because this was a year we were supposed to, you could argue this pretty successfully one way or the other, either be built or be real close to built. And what we have been is a bit of a catastrophe. Dumpster fire, some would have said. So if you look at the Dolphins game, the defense came out and played lights out. Now, you guys know there's a bunch of dual camps in Buccaneerdom, and you know, one of them is the get tools or weapons for Winston, which we went out and did, and then the other one is the sort of more traditional defense wins championships. Well, the defense has been neglected for quite some time. Now, we happened into some great linebacking talent. We have a defensive line that we thought would be good enough, and then the two people who are supposed to start at the ends both got broken, and so we were left without any real edge pressure, which has made the rest of the defensive line fall apart. Now, Coach Smith has been hamstrung a bit with the injuries at linebacker, with his flexibility on play calling. He's also seemed to err on the side of conservative over aggressive, which, to be honest, at this point, especially in a season that is essentially lost, though all but for mathematics, to continue to fall back into soft zone and let people beat us over the middle just doesn't seem to make any sense. I think what we'd like to see is a lot more of that aggression, which we seem to go away from on third down, which is why we're giving up the third down conversions at such a ridiculous clip. Now, on the offensive side of the ball, the question becomes, what's up with the offensive line? And we have beaten this to death and will continue to do so, and I have done enough mea culpas for everyone who has a podcast, and believe me, there's 1,000 of you out there now on though fortunately, as is often the case, when bandwagons start to fall apart, many of those things have already disappeared. The offensive line was supposed to be better this year. It was supposed to be better because of development in-house. It was supposed to be developed because of a healthy Sweezy, and it has not been. And finally, people are starting to realize that this has been true for quite some time. I had hoped it would be better this year. I was wrong. I did think genuinely that Donovan Smith would take steps forward. I did think genuinely that Sweezy would improve. Our guard played dramatically. The only thing that has been true, in my opinion, is Ali Marpet is a really good center, just like he's a really good guard, and that DeMar Dotson's playing pretty good football. Outside of that, we've got nothing to hang our hats on the offensive line. Now, I was on the Pewtercast, Instantcast, or I can't remember which one it is. They do a lot of episodes now, which is great. Brent Allen and Ren Dax do a great job on that podcast, as well as on some of the articles that they're writing for PewterPlank and beyond. But I was on there, and they were talking to me about the offensive line, and I have posited, though admittedly with some level of bias, that maybe it is time to bring back a Joe Holly and get his attitude in there, because Sweezy was supposed to bring that attitude, but we've gotten none of that. All we've gotten is missed blocks and penalties. And you slide Ali Marpet over. And Brent asked a really good question, or Ren, I can't remember which one it was. One of the two gentlemen asked the question, does that set Ali's development at center back because you move him back over to guard? And I don't think that it does. Now, you certainly could make a strong argument that you just take Sweezy out and take the dual-headed guard that we have on the left-hand side, which is a stupid move, and I can't speak in more strong terms about how dumb I think it is that they're shuttling. But we don't even have that opportunity anymore because now Evan Smith is in concussion protocol and can't play. So by default, we've got Kevin Pamphil over there who didn't play particularly well last week, but at least he's going to get a chance to have consecutive plays and get some burn. But you got to put someone in at right guard if Sweezy's not the guy. And I think that the right answer is, and now they're not going to do this, and I haven't been watching. I've been on Thanksgiving, guys. I mean, here's the thing. This is holiday week for me and my family. We were up in Virginia Beach. I've paid attention to the injuries. But I had a strong reflection moment in New Orleans when I felt that the team, and you guys, a lot of you came to this conclusion a long time before I did, when I felt that the team didn't care as much as we did. And so, no, I'm not going to spend my Thanksgiving trying to figure out whether they're going to make Joe active and these things. There are times of the year where I'll do that. In training camp and when I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do for the year, I'll spend all that time and build those plans and do those things. But if the team shows that they're not as interested in it as we are, then I'm not going to do that on Thanksgiving week for sure. But something has to happen on the offensive line, and I made the comment on Brent and Ren's podcast that with a season like this, regardless of how it turns out, if the Bucks rattle off wins, it doesn't matter. I think both line coaches are gone at the end of the season. I think they both legitimately should be. I think they both underperformed. And either they don't have the charisma to demand or request or whatever verb you want to use more talent for their pantry, or they thought they had the right talent and they screwed it up badly enough that this season has been essentially a huge, huge disappointment. So I don't think this is going to cost the head coach's job. I don't think it should. I don't think this is going to cost the defensive coordinator his job, nor do I think that it should. But there's going to be some heads that roll, and I think that those are two that will. There may be others beyond that, but those are the two that I think will. Now, of the skill positions, one of the things that I've yet to be able to figure out, now obviously if you're not able to run the ball, though we do seem to pass protect relatively well, if you're not able to run the ball, it makes your offensive game plan a little bit tough. We do seem to still think we have to throw the ball to DeSean Jackson 50 yards down the field. You don't have to do that to get him the ball. You can get him the ball in space. This is still easily available. Mike Evans looked like he took a week off when he came back last week. I love Mike Evans. I love what he brings to the game. I think he is a game-breaking wide receiver, a top-five talent in the NFL. I need to see his fire back, and it's not there right now. I don't know whether that's because of the way the season has gone, whether that's because he misses Jameis back there. And I know Jameis is a lightning rod topic that we'll talk about a little bit on this broadcast as well. But, you know, Mike has to be able to take over games, and he was not able to take that game over with really no reason athletically. He is a mismatch on the field every time he steps out. So do I think we should focus on him all the time? No. But I think he's a guy who should get a ton of looks regardless of what's going on. And it's not like they're you know, doubling and bracketing him like they used to. They're having to pay attention to DeSean, even though we're not doing anything to make them pay attention to DeSean, which is also a bit vexing. Now, in the receiving core, there's another topic I want to bring up. You guys know I am an ardent and staunch advocate of Adam Humphries. I railed against people raising hell about him with the fumble earlier in the season where they blamed him for the loss. This guy's been sure-handed his whole career with us. Hard worker, had great camp, does everything you want to do. Listen, Adam's coming off of a string of relatively tough games for him. He's had drops, which are not Adam Humphries' thing. He's got to get his head out of his butt because Chris Godwin, while he is not the slot receiver that Adam is, he is more of an outside receiver. They're going to get him more snaps if Adam continues not to perform. And that's a problem for Adam. Now, for me, as a Bucs fan, I don't care. I just want the best receivers out there. I like Adam. I'd like him to be here. I like what he brings to the game when he plays well. But he's got to play well. That's the most important part of that, is you've got to actually do the job you're here to do. Tight end-wise, my friend Chris from the podcast formerly known as Bucs Brief, who I think tweets more now since his podcast went away than he did when he had a podcast, which is fine by me because he's a very knowledgeable Bucs media personality or whatever you want to call him. I guess he's supposed to be an idiot fan, I think is what he was called by someone who doesn't understand how this stuff works. But his comment about Stocker coming back is a really good one. And our boy B. Wall Street oversimplified things, and I'll tweet about that as well, by saying that doesn't matter, the run game still sucks. These things are rarely binaries, guys. When you look at the kind of system that has to go in place and the number of blocks that happen on every individual run plays rarely just fail or succeed. Yes, you can go Cartesian and break it down into a fail or a succeed, but if you look at the nuance of the play, it's usually one or two missed blocks here or there, a missed assignment here or there. Luke Stocker has always been like our sixth best offensive lineman who's not an offensive lineman. Now, given the way our offensive line is playing this year, he may be our fourth best, to be honest. But with him in there, you know he's going to make the blocks. You know he's going to be on his assignment. And if that's true, then maybe some of these almost big plays that we have been dribbling down our feet convert and become big plays on the ground. If you start gaining yards on the ground, then all of a sudden Dirk Cutter and Coach Monken are opened up on the passing game and can start doing some things that are interesting with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has done an absolutely admirable job coming in for Jameis, being efficient, being controlled, doing what a good veteran backup quarterback is supposed to do. I thought he was terrible in training camp. Brent brought up the point that he said he had thought about retiring, and then after Arizona, he realized he had the passion for the game. I don't care what happened. All I know is he's playing the way we hoped he would play as a backup, and that's what we need right now. Now, I think I made it pretty clear in my tweets, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the answer for the Buccaneers, and if you think he is, you should probably start following another sport. Jameis Winston is head and shoulders above him in almost every conceivable way. But there's a bunch of muddy water around Jameis right now, and I'm not going to belabor the point in here. for any length of time, because I've already said it on Twitter. We've already talked about it on other podcasts. When you look at a quarterback, you look at talent, you look at upside, ceiling, I think a lot of times people call it. But now we're talking about these character issues. And of course, all the ones that have already been passed are now brought back up as if they were real and brought back to the forefront. And folks are just putting news out there that's not news. It's everyone else making their comments about things, half of which isn't accurate to the story. I've said it before. I've had the fortunate opportunity to get a chance to know him a little bit, not as well as some of our other folks in town like Mark Cook and these guys. Obviously get a chance to know Jameis better than I do. I get to know him some through the charity work that we do. I find this to be a really odd situation, but the reality is you have to follow up and get to the bottom of it. But for right now, the fact that there are people that are already ready to move past him just is beyond me, given what, again, these same folks would have gone out and gotten Greg Hardy, which just blows my mind. So listen to the doctors, give him the time, heal him up, NFL, get off your butts, do the investigation, figure out what really happened, and then either take steps and find out that the guy did it, or that's what we're going to believe is true, or find out that he didn't and exonerate him. I do know that there's a group of people that doesn't matter if he's exonerated, they're going to find him guilty anyway, because it's the same group of people that found him guilty before. They may have been right before, but that wasn't how it played out. And we do have presumption of innocence here. Now, the NFL doesn't have to abide by presumption of innocence. They can suspend him anyway. But that's different than anything else. On the defensive side of the ball, with Vernon out, we're going to have to rely significantly on our corners and safeties to play well. Chris tweeted about Chris Conte, who has quietly played well this season, like he has most of the time when he's not injured, but people don't really want to pay attention to that either. Justin Evans has been playing very good football. TJ Ward, who we really want to step in and be something special, has not been something special yet, but it may just take more burn for him to be that special player. It's a good rotation they've got going on back there. They need to keep going with that rotation. But the linebackers are where this defense is going to work. Gerald McCoy is playing at a great pace. Will Goldston, back from a very scary injury, has got to play like the guy that got the big contract, and he just hasn't. And I love Will, and I've said this before, but he has to play big. He has to play big against the run, and he has to make an impact on pass pressure. Now, the other thing that has to happen is the guys like Daryl Tapp and folks we brought in to create some edge pressure and help Gerald McCoy out have got to do their jobs. If Gerald's going to get doubled and focused on the way he has gotten focused on all year round, it's on someone else to get the job done. Now, that's either the front four, or if Coach Smith decides to get crafty and go with the 3-3-5 or any other configuration, it's the linebackers on their blitzes. And you've got three horses back there that are ridiculous with Levante Quan and Kendall Beckwith. And Levante and Quan are both back from their injuries. They're both playing great football. And at this point, like I said, the advantage we have is we have nothing to lose. We're such an outside shot. Who cares? Take the risks. What are you protecting? It just doesn't make sense to try and be conservative at this point. So we'll have to see what Coach Smith decides to do this week. Now, you're playing on an Atlanta Falcons team who, like I said, still has tons of weapons. Yeah, Devontae Freeman's out, but it's an offense that's high-powered. Julio Jones can go off for 200 yards in any given game. Matt Ryan continues to be one of the most efficient passers in the NFL. He's seen it all, so that whole thing I just said about blitzing becomes dangerous with Matt, because he's smart, and he's going to decipher a lot of that. So it's going to be chess games. Now, Mike Smith certainly knows Matt Ryan well, so being able to get to that chess match will be interesting to see how the pieces line up and how the execution lines up. The turnovers, and I know there was some call for turnovers from a couple articles this week, turnovers are always important because you get extra possessions. When your offense is inefficient and requires a ton of possessions to get any points at all, yes, extra possessions matter. See Dolphins game last week. We should have won that game by 21 points, but we were not able to because our offense couldn't score. Now, the other thing that the defense doing that does is if you do get a chance to go up by two scores, then the defense has a ton of flexibility with the aggression because they're not always on the precipice of having everything fall apart. On the defensive side of the ball for Atlanta, you know, the talk of the town has been Adrian Claiborne, and I want to say a couple things about that. I love Adrian Claiborne as a person. I was fortunate enough to build a relationship with him off the field, a great guy, a pretty decent golfer, and a heck of a good dude, and a good football player. I didn't like him when we let him go, but the reality is that huge game he had was mildly anomalous, but he is a really good defensive end. Is he the next Michael Strahan? No. But don't be surprised that Adrian Claiborne plays good football. He played good football here. He wasn't Simeon Rice, and when you're not Simeon Rice here, you're going to get drummed out of town. they insisted on also shoving a square peg in a round hole by moving them around. So don't be shocked, but also don't be shocked that when we let him go, he wasn't that then either. He was just middle of the road on performance, and he had an opportunity to go somewhere else and get the money that he needed to get, and that's the way it works out sometimes, guys. You can't compare that to a Michael Bennett. As much as I love Adrian, Michael Bennett was playing top-tier football with the Buccaneers, and the Buccaneers organization, vis-a-vis Mark Domenech, screwed him over not once, but twice. And he pulled the screw me once, shame on you, screw me twice, shame on me, and went out and got paid. He's continued to play good football. They are not analogous situations. They're only similar because they play the same position. If you watch the tape, they're different players. And that is from an unabashed fan of Adrian Claiborne as a player and a person. So there are tons of things you can point at and attack this organization for that are stupid. Literally, you can't walk through the landscape of the Buccaneers without tripping over opportunities to attack it for stupidity. Don't pick dumb ones that don't make any sense. You make yourself look like a fool. At least to people who know better. Now, what are we going to hope to see this week? Well, I hope we're going to see somehow, I don't know how, better offensive line play, the ability to get any running back. Like I said, I'm tired of banging the Doug Martin drum because it doesn't matter to you folks who are going to be anti-Doug Martin people. The tape doesn't matter. If you've got a bone to pick with Doug, you've got a bone to pick with Doug. It's not different than the people who think Jameis is a horrible human being, because it's just not borne out by the stuff that's on tape. But that requires you to go back and watch coaches' film, and it requires you to understand how blocking works and all that sort of stuff. And that just makes people's heads hurt. It's a lot easier to pick something that looks like it's on a TV show. But whoever the running back is, whether it's Doug or Jacquizz or whether it's Charles, I don't really care. Peyton. The offensive line has to give them an opportunity to get yards. You got to get to that 3.5, 4 yards a clip pace so that you can count on the running game to convert for you. I do expect to see Ryan Fitzpatrick continue to get more and more comfortable as the quarterback here. Right? This is more first-team reps. This is more opportunity in games. Now, he's got a ton of experience. It's not about that. But it's about experience with this set of talent, throwing to these receivers. So he's the kind of guy who is veteran enough to see these things and go talk to the coaches and have that level of confidence. Not that Jameis has ever lacked confidence, mind you. But Ryan has no problem going back to the coaching staff and saying, this is exactly what we need to do, and going back there and hopefully trying to execute it. There is no question that this team has the talent to put up 35 points a game. The question has always been, when will it happen? And that's the question that could be the damning thing for Coach Cutter, is he's got all the groceries he needs. He picked the groceries, and he is not cooking the dinner. So as the eternal optimist and as someone who hopes that I will see something good in Atlanta tomorrow when I'm watching, I know like we got a ton of people up there, like I said, watching it live. I'm hoping to see the defense do similar to what they did in Miami last week against a much better offense, mind you, but create some turnovers. I'm hoping for 2 turnovers. You always want the defense to score if they can. God, that takes so much pressure off if you can get that. That's what we had in Chicago week one. If you can get those quick turns, man, that is huge for a team's morale. But this offense of Tampa Bay has got to figure out and get some kind of swagger. They have to start feeling some sort of confidence that they're going to be able to score when they have the ball and are moving down the field. They're on a fast track in the dome. That should help DeSean Jackson out tremendously. I don't think there's a player on the field who can stay with him. And if they decide they're going to sit 12 yards off the ball and we don't take advantage of it this week, my head might crack down the middle. So if you hear about a dude in Valrico whose head cracked down the middle, it may be me if we're not running some quick passes to DeSean Jackson out there and forcing him to come up and try and play a little bit closer in coverage, which will allow him to get behind the defense and really open up that offensive playbook. Because once they have to roll safeties over to DeSean, Mike Evans is just going to be unstoppable. And that was always the 1-2 punch that we wanted. All of this without any discussion of Cam Brate or O.J. Howard over the middle when either one of those two things happens. This speaks to the weapons that are here. This is about either schematics or execution or both, and it seems like it's both. One of them, there's one throw to choke. One of them, there's 11. Call it 16 with substitutions. We'll see what Chris Godwin does this week. It's nice to see that we've got our boy Pat Murray kicking. Inside, he should be no issue, and Brian Anger continues to throw darts. So last week, skulls and swords, you know, it's interesting. I want to give the sword probably just on principle once again to Levante David. because I think he has been the key to the resurgence. So Gerald played great football as well. I don't think that on offense there's anyone who I would do that for. And on the skull side, I think he's got to go to Jared Sweezy. Though I think you could pick a number of folks on the offensive line to make that happen. This week, I honestly think I'm going to end up with the sword or the predictive MVP on offense going to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Not because I think he's the second coming of, I was going to pick the Buffalo quarterback, Frank Wright. That's an obscure reference for any football fans out there. But because I think he's gotten his legs underneath him. He knows what's out there. This defense is one that he's going to have to be protected. You know, Adrian Claiborne going against, as Thomas Bassinger put in his article, Adrian Claiborne going against Donovan Smith, who's played bad football lately. If Ryan can stay upright, Ryan has an opportunity to complete a lot of passes this week for quite some yards on this track. And predictive MVP on defense, I'm staying with the bell cow, staying with Lavonte David. I think as he goes, so goes our defense, not because of any slight to Gerald McCoy or any slight to Quan Alexander, but I think he is the heart and soul of this defense, and he will be where everything else feeds from. So for everyone who wants to harken back to the days of yore with Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks, I think you have to invert the model. I don't think that it's Warren Sapp leading in this case. The analogous player would be Gerald McCoy. I think it's the linebacker, and I think it's Lavonte David. I am going to pick, of course, because I always pick the Bucks to win, I'm going to say that we get to 32. We're going to have an offensive explosion at some point. It's got to happen. Otherwise, it's trouble for the Bucks. And 32 to call it 24. I'd love it to be worse. I dislike the Falcons intensely. Not as intensely as I dislike the Eagles, but certainly it is a close, close contest. So, at any rate, thanks for tuning in. I will get this podcast up and out to the stream when I get back to the house. It is 1:46 Eastern Time on I-95 South coming down through St. Augustine. Apologize for any background noise if you've heard it during the podcast or the broadcast, but this will probably be out on the channel at about 6 o'clock tonight. If you're going to Atlanta, again, check out the Buccaneers Invasion tailgate. The map was tweeted out earlier. I'll tweet it out again. Say hi to John Superfan, ATL Bucks. I know that Big Nasty will be there, Tim Young, Franco, Shawnee, a whole crew, P-Dub. There's a whole crew going up there for this game. So make sure you see those Bucks fans, and hopefully you guys will make them very sad again. So go Bucks. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scoo. Scoo.
Yeah. 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 We're like bugs running, man. I think that's all, folks. My man, Oaks. Just shut down another show. Same day, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here. Talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, no need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him old school. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.